This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works. Just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast for today. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We are summarizing some of the highlights of the recent ACAM annual conference that was held in Las Vegas. I was lucky enough to attend. I taught a course in IV nutrition. You can actually hear a podcast where I talk about that. If you go back a week or so, because that subject was fresh in my mind and a very, very important part of our armamentarium of therapies in the field of integrative medicine. The next thing that was presented at ACAM was a very, very brilliant cancer specialist presented on the future of cancer therapy. And I got to say that this particular presentation was very technical and even challenging for me and other medical professionals in the audience to understand. But what it illustrates, and I'll just boil it down for you, is in the future we will have very, very targeted laser-like therapies that are very personalized, individualized towards not just different types of cancer, but the characteristics of each type of cancer and the individual who has the cancer. So that, and some of these are very high tech, involving drugs that are very expensive, involving genetic testing, but very sci-fi kinds of ways to, rather than just fire away with chemotherapy in some kind of protocol way, like, okay, pancreatic cancer, this is the protocol, we do this, that, and the, no, what is the characteristic of your pancreatic cancer? What are the genes in that cancer tell us about what types of therapy the cancer will respond to? And then through a deft manipulation of all the different therapeutic options we have, we'll be able to hone in on the most effective therapies rather than firing away blindly. Also, there are what are called immunotherapies. There are monoclonal antibodies. There's a whole bunch of new things that are happening. There are also cancer smart bombs that involve attacking cancer with viruses. There actually has been some work attacking cancer with a deactivated HIV virus. The patient doesn't get AIDS, but the virus delivers a killing effect that targets specifically cancer cells without harming normal cells. We can do this with other viruses. The measles virus has been tried in some really high-tech, very encouraging developments on the cancer front. So, okay, that being the case, you know, you got a lot of this still on the drawing boards. A lot's very expensive. A lot depends on, you know, whether you come to go to the right expert practitioner, because there are centers of excellence who utilize these therapies. And unfortunately, the standard of care in cancer varies. But one therapy that was very interesting was a therapy that's unfortunately not utilized enough in America. It's actually utilized a lot more in Germany, and that is what's called hyperthermia. Hyperthermia, old-fashioned idea, is that you heat the body to kill the cancer. But now we have techniques to deliver the heat in a more directed way so that you don't just, you know, give a person, heat a person up to 106 degrees and make them miserable and maybe cause damage to organs, even brain damage, such high temperatures. You can heat the tumor specifically with certain probes that go deep into the body, penetrating the tissue to a great depth, of several inches and get in there and zap the cancer. So the heat has direct, it literally can heat up and kill the tumor, but it also generates what are called heat shock proteins, which actually stimulate the body's immune system to target and kill the cancer. And it activates the immune response by some mechanisms that I won't go into because they're very complicated. And I barely even understand them. So anyway, the encouraging news about high-tech treatment for cancer. So, but let's focus on the next lecturer who is really interesting because his therapy is the opposite, which it is very low-tech and simple. It's a simple dietary strategy for cancer, which is the work of Dr. Thomas Seyfried. He's at Boston College in New York. He's a professor. And his theory is that cancer is a mitochondrial metabolic disease. Okay, well, that may not make a lot of sense to you, but a lot of the mainstream cancer researchers believe that cancer is a genetic disease. The DNA mutates and it goes crazy. But what Dr. Seyfried is saying is that regardless of what the DNA is doing, the metabolism of the cell governs the expression of the DNA. So that even if you've got mutations, if your cell is functioning optimally, it can keep these genetic flaws from being expressed and keep the cancer from going crazy. So how do you keep a cell healthy, or how do you actually influence the metabolism of a cancer cell? Well, it turns out that you got to go back to the theory of a guy who is a mid-20th century guy, early 20th century guy, Otto Warburg. In 1956, he published something called On the Origin of Cancer Cells. And the theory is that cancer arises from damage to what's called cellular respiration. You know, some of us study this in high school and college. It's like Krebs cycle. Also, he's a German guy. The Krebs cycle was discovered by Krebs in Germany in the early 20th century. And the idea is that cancer cells, in the presence of oxygen, make lactate, lactic acid, excess lactic acid. Enhanced fermentation is the sine qua non, the metabolic derangement of all cancer cells. And this has been named the Warburg effect. Okay, what's the implication of that? Well, the implication of that is, this is an inefficient type of metabolism. It's called, anaerobic metabolism. And this is something that leads to cancer proliferating. And what is the primary fuel of cancer? Very simply, it's sugar. Cancer thrives on sugar. And so, that being the case, Dr. Seyfried has proposed, as a means of controlling cancer, basically starve the cancer. Well, how do you starve the cancer without starving you? Well, you can survive on fats and some protein. And that is called a ketogenic diet. The ketogenic diet has actually been tested out in animals and in humans for some of the most challenging forms of cancer. Brain cancer that usually kills within a year. There have been cases of 5-year or more survival of cancer that just is impossible to treat conventionally with a ketogenic diet. Ketogenic diet, by the way, involves about 70% fat. And in fact, you have to supplement for just caloric value, something called MCT oil, or you can use coconut oil as a source of calories. But it's a tough diet to follow, but it can work. And if you got, I mean, one thing, you want to lose weight, okay, go on a ketogenic diet, you lose weight like crazy, but maybe that's a little frivolous. But if you've got a cancer that is certain to kill you, it might be worth a try to undertake a ketogenic diet. Now, in talking to the late, great Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, I bounced this question off him, does it always work? And the answer is, he says, it can work, but doesn't always work. But nothing always works. And this is a therapy that's well worth investigating. The other thing you can do is you can apply caloric restriction. Just caloric restriction will actually enhance the body's immune response and will inhibit cancer growth. And all too often we take our cancer patients and we actually stuff them like Strasburg geese. We don't want to see them lose weight because it's scary. But that may actually preferentially feed the cancer, especially when you feed a lot of carbohydrates. So one of the take-homes from Dr. Seyfried's lecture was you just don't go on a ketogenic diet like the Atkins diet. You know, go out and eat a ham, bacon, cheeseburger and throw away the bun. You actually have to somewhat restrict the calories. So it is not just eat as much fat as you want. You have to somewhat restrict your calories for this to work. And he showed some pictures of dogs with big tumors, you know, big obvious superficial tumors, big swollen noses and, you know, disfiguring tumors before and after on the ketogenic diet. And darned if those tumors didn't shrink and disappear on a ketogenic diet. By the way, dogs are not supposed to be eating cookies and bread and, you know, sugary candies, but people give their dogs these kinds of things. That may promote cancer growth. That's maybe why we're seeing an epidemic of cancer in our dogs, in addition to all the environmental pollutants. And they live close to the ground and sniff all kinds of bad chemical stuff in our homes and on the streets. But this is a very intriguing theory. It's a controversial theory. In addition, though, another way to zap the cancers, according to Dr. Seyfried, is with hyperbaric oxygen. Cancer cells don't like oxygen. It's actually known that if you do radiation and you apply hyperbaric oxygen simultaneously, it will enhance the effects of the radiation. Well, hyperbaric oxygen can enhance the benefits of a ketogenic diet. And actually, maybe this is one of the reasons why exercise has such a good effect in certain cancers. It will definitely increase one's chances of survival with most cancers. I mean, again, you can exercise and still die of cancer, no question. But you may improve your likelihood of surviving by 30 to 60%, depending on which cancer, depending on which study you're looking at, if you oxygenate your body. Or you can go into a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, which even further oxygenates your tissue. So this is good stuff from Dr. Thomas Seyfried. I recommend, if you want to learn more about it, you can Google Dr. Seyfried and find out about it. By the way, you know, the stuff that I'm talking about, it's available via tapes. You can go to acam.org. You can buy a tape and listen to the lectures, and you can get the full syllabus. All right, moving right along, my good colleague Dr. Tom Williams, who's been a guest here on Intelligent Medicine, he'll appear again later this year, gave a lecture on stress and adrenal function. And he really does a great job in summarizing the situation with our adrenals, which really, it's not just about our adrenals. Our adrenals interact with our pituitary and our hypothalamus and our brain. And we kind of take a simplistic view when we say, my adrenals are worn out. My adrenals are shot. Or my adrenals are in overdrive. It's a very, very complex system. What's called the HPA system, the hypothalamic pituitary axis. Does a good job of talking about it in his lecture. But one of the take-home messages was maybe, just maybe, we're not doing the right testing on adrenals. I mean, commonly when we test the adrenals, we give people a saliva test, and we tell them, oh, you know, when you wake up or when the first couple of hours while you're awake, you know, just spit in the tube and then do it three times subsequently later in the day. The point that he was making, a big take-home point from his lecture, was that the adrenal salivary cortisol test that we as doctors use to measure stress may need to be more rigorously applied. It may need to be done precisely 30 minutes to 45 minutes after awakening, before having a meal, before doing exercise. And it needs to be standardized, because a lot of people get these tests, and what they do is they say, well, look, I'm really busy during the week, so I'll do it on a Sunday when I'm relaxed. And that will actually not capture their actual stress levels, because Sunday is kind of a chill day. The proper time to do that test is maybe on Monday morning. You know, tell everybody to do the test on Monday. There's a wide variety of disorders that are related to stress. We know that. But some of the disorders associated with the stress response system, depression, anorexia, panic disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, alcoholism, excess exercise can change the way that the adrenals work. Diabetes, overweight, pregnancy, nicotine withdrawal, fibromyalgia, and chronic fatigue syndrome. Certainly, these patients really, we should investigate their cortisol levels and whether their adrenals are working properly. Postpartum depression, any kind of allergic condition, rheumatoid arthritis, low blood pressure, weakness, wooziness, menopausal symptoms, and on it goes. So virtually any condition can be linked to some either overactive or underactive adaptation of the adrenals. It's more the adaptation of your adrenals to what's going on overall. Licorice turns out to be one of the ways that you can support and raise your adrenal function if your adrenal function is low. Adaptogens are nice things to use if you have adrenal function, and Dr. Williams explained in his lecture how they work. They include things like Shizandra and Ashwagandha and just a wide variety of plant materials. Some of them include rhodiola, reishi mushrooms, Siberian ginseng. These are the major adrenal adaptogens. And what they do is they're kind of cool because they help the adrenals adapt to stress. And they can be used in either a high cortisol or a low cortisol situation because they are adaptogens. Adaptogens are thus named because they helped you adapt properly to stress and have a more normal or optimal stress response. So there are many sources of stress, not just, you know, you got a bad boss or you got a bad marital partner. Stress comes from blood sugar. It comes from the environment, from toxins. It comes from hormonal aberrations. If you've got a thyroid problem, you can have more stress to your HPA axis. It even comes from things like electromagnetic radiation. So there's a whole spectrum of issues when we study stress. But I think it's very important for virtually every patient who comes to see an integrative physician to get a proper assessment of their HPA axis, whether it's under stress, and to take appropriate measures to reduce stress. Some of them are lifestyle measures, and some are, you know, taking the right supplements to help their body properly cope with and adapt to stress. And, the test gives us an idea, and it's kind of a teachable moment. You know, you show a patient a result like, wow, you know, you're in adrenal overdrive, you know, you have a very high stress situation, or you're in a state of depletion and exhaustion, your adrenals are shutting down, and we need to do more study of adrenal patterns in patients. Another great lecturer, I had a chance to have a great conversation with her at ACAM, Dr. Martha Herbert, a very interesting person because she's a pediatric neurologist. Pediatric neurologists these days are basically people you go to if your kid is not performing well in school, or if you get a teacher referral that your kid is impossible in a classroom, and you go there to get some Adderall or some ADD medication. And she has a very, very interesting take on preconceptual planning and pregnancy and infancy. Her work is very interesting. And she maintains that autism is not hardwired, but acquired. And how do we know that? Well, we know about what's called neuroplasticity. Kids respond to biomedical interventions. If it was really hardwired, then, you know, no diet change, no supplements would ever make a difference. But they do. We know that. So this is a brief overview of some of the highlights of the ACAM conference. Many other great speakers on subjects like nutrigenomics, which is the study of how our genes influence what we should be eating or what supplements we should be taking. Great conference. I recommend it highly to those of your health professionals out there. And if you, as a patient or a potential patient, are desirous of seeing an ACAM physician, go to acam.org, acam.org. There's a physician finder there. Plug in your zip code, and you can find a doctor who has been schooled in these techniques and kind of speaks my language. If you like the stuff you hear on Intelligent Medicine, you may want to find yourself a physician who is trained in to see patients the way that I see patients. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.